You know what time it is. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast. Let me hear you. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No hot takes. No garbage. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No fake takes. No first takes. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
This is the Weekend Warrior Podcast presented by WTP Sports. I am your host, as always, Pat Lane. It is episode 64 tonight. That makes it the Dave Wolabaugh episode, the Will Middlebrooks episode, and the Dustin Pedroia episode. That's right, Will Middlebrooks and Dustin Pedroia both wore 64. Interesting story about Dave Wolabaugh. He played for the Patriots for a few years and then actually was the starting center of the second time around Cleveland Browns in their inaugural year, which I guess technically is their inaugural year, but when they came back, he was their starting center their first year of existence after coming back again. Kind of sad about Pedroia. We don't know if he's done. No idea, obviously. Seems like he's done for the year, but it's kind of interesting that, you know, in the same week they traded for Ian Kinsler, it's Dustin Pedroia week. So, this week, we have an interesting guest. Nora Princiati is coming on to talk Patriots. She is a writer for the Boston Globe. She is a lot of fun to talk to, super knowledgeable, so definitely stick around for that. And we talk a lot about wide receiver because that's kind of on everyone's mind right now, but we did dive into some other things too, so don't want to miss that interview for sure. After that, as always, have the three-minute drill and also this week in sports history. Now, before I get you to the interview with Nora, I just want to remind you that EatSleepFantasy.com, they are probably the best fantasy guys around. They got a ton of really good writers. You know, Dale's been on the show before. John's been on the show. We have the fantasy draft specialist coming up in a few weeks. They're going to be on talking fantasy football. Just remember, you go into EatSleepFantasy.com and you can sign up for a bunch of different levels of things. They have draft kits and they have all sorts of different things you can sign up for. Any membership you sign up for, you give the promo code WWP, capital W, capital W, capital P, and you get 15% off of any membership that you sign up for. So, pretty good deal, I think. So, again, EatSleepFantasy.com, sign up for any of their memberships. You should do it. I've done it already. You absolutely should do it. And again, they're just good fantasy guys to be around. The podcast's a lot of fun. I enjoy listening to it. I think you'll enjoy listening to it too if you haven't already listened to it. They're my go-to fantasy guys. So I'm excited about this. Again, EatSleepFantasy.com. And anytime you sign up for a membership, use the promo code WWP and you get 15% off. Now, without further ado, let's get you into the interview with Nora. All right, so we're going to welcome onto the show Nora Princiati. She is a Patriots writer for the Boston Globe. Nora, welcome onto the show.
Thanks, Pat. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. Super excited. We've kind of gone back and forth for a while and finally kind of ready to get it done. And I appreciate you coming on.
Totally.
All right. So let's get right into it. Well, we're recording on Wednesday. So I guess today Matthews is, well, first reported that he was cut, but now it looks like he's going to IR for the year, but maybe he can get out of it. I don't know. Point is, he's not playing for the Patriots this year. Edelman's obviously out the first 4 weeks. Mitchell looks like he's probably not going to play this year, although we don't know. What the heck is going on at wide receiver?
So, yeah, just first thing to clarify the Jordan Matthews thing, because he was on a one-year deal, there's really not – it's a semantic thing between just cutting him outright and putting him on IR, because the likelihood is that they'll negotiate an injury settlement and then he'll become a free agent again. Obviously, there's a difference when a player is on a multi-year contract, because then if they go on IR, one, maybe there's a chance the team thinks that they could bring them back later in the year with one of those two spots. But then also, obviously, the team is invested in retaining their rights for seasons to come, which is not the case with Jordan Matthews. So really, I know people were making a big deal out of the difference between just releasing him outright and putting him on IR, but it's semantic at best.
That's funny.
Yes. More importantly, yikes. They're dropping like flies. It's not great.
Well, that's one way to put it.
Figure, well, right. So to open the season, Chris Hogan's probably going to be your number one guy, right? And then you've got two guys in Philip Dorsett and Kenny Britt who there's upside, right? Because if Kenny's healthy and Dorsett can play during an actual regular season game the way that he's looked through, I don't know, what, 6 days of training camp practice is where we are so far, because he looks fantastic.
He does look great.
But, yeah, and I mean, he's been playing all over the field. They've had him at slot receiver a decent amount of the time, which actually caused me to go back and look, and I don't have the number in front of me right now, but he, I think somewhere around 40% of his routes were out of the slot last year, which was like way higher than I ever would have expected. If you'd asked me to guess that, I would have said maybe 20.
Right.
So given that he wasn't, I mean, 20 max. So given that he wasn't a huge fixture in the offense last season, I've got to figure that that's skewed by a handful of routes he ran where he wasn't targeted. But still,
right,
just the fact that he was working out of there already a decent amount is interesting to me because, again, by the eye test, I never would have said that.
I agree. Well, the one thing about Dorsett.
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say that.
I mean, you have like upside with, if everything goes as well as it possibly could with those two, great. Kenny Britt's got a ton of talent. Same with Dorsett. But Britt can't get healthy, and Dorsett's never really been able to put it all together. So it's kind of like, you know, you have to at least say, well, we'll wait and see with those guys. And if those two things don't go well, then you go from Hogan to Cordarrelle Patterson, who in your dream world is really basically just a special teams player. So not great.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the interesting thing about Dorsett, and you bring him up, and I think people are looking for him to make a contribution. What I heard, you know, from everyone that was around the team was that they loved the attitude he brought to the team. They loved the fact that he was always willing to do whatever the coaches asked of him and was always working hard and never, you know, always had a positive attitude. And yet he was with the team the whole year. Now, he obviously missed the offseason workouts and training camp, but it's not like he didn't have time to build up a rapport. He was there all year long, and he could just never put it together. And I think that's the perfect way for you to say it, is that it just never happened for him. And so that's the concern, is that even if he looks good in practice, is he going to be able to put it together in the game? You know, and I think that that's – to be relying on Dorsett as your number two receiver is scary. And I think Britt, too, is the same thing. Like, Britt's had – he's kind of on and off. And his whole career, there have been stretches where he's uncoverable. And then
right,
he disappears for 8 weeks. And you're like, what happened to him? Like, he's just gone. And so that's the – like, that's where it gets alarming for me, is that now we're relying on Philip Dorsett and Kenny Britt to basically run the offense. And that's a lot to ask.
Right. I mean, Belichick went kind of long on an answer today about the value in getting to be with a team from the beginning of a year,
right,
you know, go through the offseason program, have a full training camp, and then go through a full season, which obviously, you know, Britt middle of the season or late, and then Dorsett right at the end of training camp last year. So neither one of those guys got that. So it's a plus that they have that. That said, with Kenny Britt, he's dealing with the hamstring thing that has been described to me as not a serious injury. Although I will say that from what I've heard, you know, it's kind of like, well, we think this day. We still haven't seen him practice. So again, not a major injury, but we've seen, you know, think about Slater last year. Hamstrings can be really tough, and
right,
they can be funky, and they can linger, and you don't really know what's going on. But, you know, especially at a position that requires a lot of running,
right,
it can really limit you without there being a concrete, you know, this was torn or this is what's
right,
wrong kind of diagnosis. So, you know,
well, that was like the Red Sox. Caution. The Red Sox a few years ago had a guy like that where I forget who even it was. I can't even remember, but they were like, oh, he'll be back in like a week. And then the week later, they were like, it'd be like another few days. And then like two months later, they were like, oh, yeah, he's coming back soon. And you're like, what? Like, he was supposed to be out a week, you know? So, so we'll see. I mean, yeah, that's the interesting thing about Britt. I am curious, though, about the two obligatory white, small white receivers in Berrios and McCarron. I was excited about McCarron. I thought that he could he looked good, kind of his college tape looked good. And you know, he was obviously with the practice squad last year. And so he'd have the full off season to kind of work with the team. Obviously Berrios gets drafted as a seventh round pick and everyone's comparing him to Edelman right away. But like, what have you seen from them? Do you think there's any chance that both or either of those guys make the team? And, you know, can they make a run at any of those higher up positions?
So I love that you brought those two guys up because I think at this point, one of them makes the team, and it's interesting that it's kind of a competition between two similar players because while that seems like something that you would see all the time, actually I wrote about this today. It's much more typical that a team's going to be saying, okay, do we carry six receivers or do we keep a ninth lineman, offensive lineman, than it is, you know, okay, we have scrappy little slot receiver who can return punts A and scrappy little slot receiver who can return punts B and we're going to pick between them. That doesn't really happen that much. And it's kind of crazy that I think it really, that situation will really play out. Obviously it's early. The thing that's kind of hard to diagnose about that situation is that in actual team drills so far, McCarron has caught one pass from Brady and Berrios zero. So they're not getting a lot of work with the first team. Maybe that'll change now because of the attrition at the position. They'll get a little bit more, you know, they'll get bumped up. But we've seen them doing much more work with Danny Etlick and Brian Hoyer than we have with Brady, which makes it a little bit tough to figure out where they stand, especially because that means they're going against the second or third team defense as well. They both look good. Berrios' cuts are really clean. He seems like, I mean, they both are just straight out of Patriot Central casting. It's so funny. McCarron, the thing to me I wonder about is that you hear from people who were around him briefly with the Texans just rave about him. They say, you know, he's Wes Welker. Oh, we love him, blah, 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 blah. It's like, if you love him so much, why did you let him go?
Right.
That doesn't totally make sense to me. But then the Patriots, I mean, they raved about him on the practice squad last year. So all the sort of verbal things and people saying nice things about both of them, obviously, you know, they liked Berrios because they drafted him, are really good.
Right.
The glass half full way to look at it is that we'll have something really interesting to watch in the preseason games in terms of which one of those guys kind of shows out a little bit better. Because I do think that there's a spot on the roster for one of them, but not two of them. And it really is between those two guys. Because we've seen, like, for instance, Devin, never know whether to say Lucien or Lucien, but he's made a number of really nice catches.
I just think
that for him to make the roster is going to be tough, especially because if it comes down to him or one of those guys, the punt return ability probably wins out.
Right. He was returning kicks. I don't know if he's still doing that, but he was returning kicks a little bit. Maybe if a guy like Patterson gets hurt, maybe he has a shot on the team. But I think you're right. I mean, they cut him once already. I don't think it's likely that he sticks around. The one thing I wonder about Berrios and McCarron is will either of those guys – I guess the real question is, will either of those guys be able to get through to the practice squad? Because obviously McCarron was on the practice squad last year. I don't know how the eligibility works, if he's still eligible. I think he probably is. Berrios is obviously eligible for it. But, you know, do they play well enough in the preseason when they don't get there? I know what happened, was it last year or 2 years ago with the corner? What the hell is his name? He went to Chicago, and now he's playing.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
He had that great interception in preseason.
There's like a K or a C in there.
Yeah, I think it's like a mix something. I forget what it is, but similar to a guy like that where they cut him thinking they could squeeze him through, doesn't make it, and now he's starting for another team somewhere else. You obviously hate to see something like that happens. especially with the Patriots at cornerback last year. But nevertheless, you know, I guess that's kind of the question there about them. So we'll see. The one other person I want to talk about at wide receiver, I know we've been talking about wide receiver for a while here, but it's an important position, is Eric Decker. He was in the day before Matthews got cut. Then Matthews gets, or whatever, gets cut or put on IR, or whatever it is. He was in, didn't sign a contract, and then left. It seems like there's some people are talking about maybe he'll be signed, but that's just conjecture at this point. If he does get signed, number one, do you think he'll get signed? And number two, if he does, does he bring anything to the table?
So I'm a little skeptical because, one, obviously Matthews at this point we know didn't work out, but the team presumably could have had an opportunity to sign Eric Decker during the offseason and went to Matthews instead.
Right.
So you already get the sense that the player that just didn't work out, the other player was already viewed as not, you know, secondary to that.
Right.
The other thing is that he came in for a workout and didn't sign. Now that doesn't, I mean, you know, in some ways that doesn't mean anything. They could sign him tomorrow. They could sign him the next day. They could sign him wherever. But the fact that he did come in for a workout and then the next day a guy gets released and this former Michigan fullback, I think his last name's Pogge. I think it's Harvey, Harry. This is embarrassing that I don't know his name. But it's he gets signed. And so they chose someone over him. You know, it's kind of hard to look at it any other way. So that to me says, like, you throw a little bit of water on the Eric Decker thing. But
right. That's
not to say that they don't like to keep their sort of, you know, all their files up to date, especially if, you know, at this point it seems sort of unimaginable, but if there were another injury at the position or, you know, Britt continues to not be able to get on the field, something like that, you know, they can always go back to that. But I wouldn't expect it to happen imminently just because they had an opportunity to do it and they didn't. And it wasn't just that they, you know, they signed someone else. I mean, obviously they're going to probably want to keep the roster at 90, but they chose a fullback over him. You know, I don't want to sound flippant about that. I love the fullback, but I just don't sense a ton of enthusiasm if that is how that visit played out.
Right. And you're right. I mean, that's certainly, you know, is definitely a possibility. I think, and I don't know, I mean, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him come in. It is weird though. You're right. I mean, like, they cut a player at his position and then
right. Instead
of signing another wide receiver, they sign a fullback. Now maybe he's got something going on where they can't sign him for a week or two. Maybe that fullback was going to be picked up by another team and the Patriots wanted to bring him in and, you know, and see what he had before he got picked. I don't know. I mean, who the heck knows, but it does seem like you had an opportunity to sign him and you signed a backup fullback instead. So like, what are you doing? You know,
the other thing being that they've seen Eric Decker in the division a lot. Now, obviously he's aging. He's on the downswing. You got to get a sense of how rapidly that's happening, how much of it he's still got. But they know this player. There's not a lot of confusion about what his body of work is, what he could potentially offer. So the idea that they need time to think about it, to me, I'm skeptical. But, you know, we'll see. And I mean, again, that's tonight, Wednesday, August 1st. So many things can happen that change the situation. And then the next minute, you know, you're thrilled that you had Eric Decker in for a workout because you have all the information that you need to have. And you can say, you know what, we need this now. Let's go. Let's do it. And then boom,
right. It's
done. So we'll see.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, I know, who was it? Colin Coward said it was Brady's worst receiving core ever. And last week, I didn't believe that. This week, maybe we're a little bit closer to the truth on that, but we'll see. So, okay, let's get away from wide receiver, though. And I'm curious about if there's any positional battles that maybe have surprised you a little bit. If there are any ones that you thought, oh, that position's locked up, or, you know, won't be much of a battle. And all of a sudden, it's like there are the few guys or a few guys fighting for the same position.
Okay, well, I'm going to give you two because the first one I'm going to give you is the punters.
Nothing wrong with that.
And so Ryan Allen has actual competition. This kid, Corey Bojorquez, is really, I mean, he's good. You know, I wouldn't pretend for a second to be an expert punter evaluator, but in terms of, you know, distance, hang time.
Would you say he wouldn't be the Mona Lisa DeVito of punting?
I would not go so far. But he looks every bit the part, and you know, it's kind of cool to see these two lefty punters battling it out. It's you know, I actually asked Berrios, you know, when was the last time you'd fielded a left-footed punt? And he said, you know, not often, maybe once last year. And so he said it's been kind of crazy having both of them. We saw Bojorquez getting some holding tips earlier today. So that's interesting. It's kind of like, you know, does he have the all-around game that Ryan Allen, obviously a really experienced veteran player, has? But it's kind of crazy to see someone who's been, you know, a mainstay be in a real battle,
right,
you know, with an undrafted rookie and a punter, no less. So
right,
the punting competition has been fierce. The other one that I will give you is not so much a direct competition in the same way, but one thing that's really stood out to me is that Isaiah Wynn has been the second team left tackle, and that's been pretty clearly entrenched when they've been repping through the different teams. Trent Brown, first team left tackle. But when, you know, when we talked to Dante Scarnecchia during the spring, and just when you sort of play through different situations in your head over the last couple of months, to me, my expectation, just, you know, based on my own guesswork and I guess educated guesswork, was that he would get some time there, but that they would try him at left guard a little bit, move him around. One, I think it's a good sign in terms of Joe Tooney's health, that they haven't felt the need to be doing that. But it also, to me, says pretty clearly that they view him as an NFL tackle, which I think, because of Isaiah Wynn's size, was something that was a pretty big question mark when they drafted him. But it seems like if that is not clearly how they view him, it's at least to the extent where they feel like there's a possibility that this player can really succeed at this position. And it's obviously such a valuable one that it's worth trying to develop him there, because we really just haven't seen him move around a lot. So that position, not really describing competition, but that's been really interesting to me.
No, but I think you're right. I mean, even if it's not a competition, which, by the way, going back to the punter thing, clearly Ryan Allen, obviously a better punter than Zoltan, but, you know, Zoltan was here and everybody loved him, and they bring in Ryan Allen and everyone was like, there's no way he's going to take his job. And he took his job, and then Ryan Allen ends up getting cut by the Steelers that year and doesn't never plays football ever again. He just kind of fell off a cliff. I don't see that happening to Ryan Allen, but, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility. I think the holder situation is what we really need to look for, because, you know, that's part of the position. If you can't hold, you ain't punting. And so it's like, you know,
right,
that's the way it goes. And so if he doesn't, you know, if he doesn't do that as well or better, you know, than Allen, then I would say Allen gets that position. But it is interesting to have a battle at that position, because it's a position you wouldn't normally think of, you know.
Punter, so, battle, nothing better.
Yeah, that's great, you know. Good. I mean, Bill Belichick is loving that. Like, the fact that he can talk about, you know, different guys on the special teams and which punter is better and hang time and who gets it out faster and with a spin and where they put it. Like, that's like a Bill Belichick wet dream right there. It's like unbelievable.
Oh, my God. He must be so happy. I can't even believe.
So, all right, and then just quickly, getting aside from positional battles, you know, just in general, is there anybody that stuck out to you at practice that you've been, like, really either surprised by somebody or, you know, happy to see someone playing well, or even on the other side where you were like, That guy just, you know, really, it wasn't as good as I thought he was going to be.
So I'll give you two corners. One, top shelf, Gilmore. He just looks incredible.
Yeah.
He's so athletic. He's made that play from the AFC Championship game in practice like four times, which is just crazy because that's not something you're supposed to be able to do on command yeah. with your body. And he just, I mean, I don't even have the words for it. He just looks phenomenal. He looks like he's worth every penny of the money. You know, obviously it's early, but for a guy who was pegged as the root of a lot of the sort of communication errors in the defense early last season, I think it's a pretty good sign to see a guy who looks so comfortable in the system that he can use all of his physical gifts and tools to their maximum. Right off the bat, he can waltz into training camp and just say, yep, I'm here. Let's go. I know everything, you know.
Right.
No confusion. And then the other one I'll give you is Ryan Lewis, who obviously, unlike Gilmore, would be fighting for a roster spot or maybe a practice squad spot. But he's been really phenomenal. He picked off Brady on Monday. It was a ball for Patterson.
It was a bad throw. That was a bad throw.
It wasn't great, but he
fought for it.
Patterson is really fast. And
yeah.
he kept up. And he still did it. And
right.
then, let's see, I think he had a pass breakup on a ball from Hoyer for Edelman, I think
you're
it
right.
was.
He did. It was a crossing route.
Yeah, and then, you know, he's made a couple other good plays going back. Another good showing today. He's just been really, you know, clearly around the ball. And sometimes, especially when the defense isn't always going full speed, it's early days of training camp, there kind of are those asterisks with a lot of the big plays that they make, like with a lot of the throws or – you know, the receiver bobbled it or the guy got a little confused or whatever. But at a certain point, you have to give a guy credit for being around the ball just all the time. And he's starting to be a guy where we end up saying his name and noticing what he's doing so often that it's kind of like, okay, there has to be something there. You know, you can look at every play and sort of start to determine why it happened and who made the mistake, but ultimately he's capitalizing on them. And if he keeps doing it at this rate, you know, he's really gonna at the very least probably get himself on the practice squad. We'll see. But he's been really impressive.
Right. Well, and that's the same thing that, you know, that Malcolm did when he first came here, which is just make plays, you know, in practice and in training camp. And like you said, I mean, yes, the throw from Brady, I think, you know, he underthrew Patterson, but he was step for step with him. I was actually I sit in the end zone, and I was there that night with my kids, and it was in my end zone, so I had a great view of it.
Oh yeah,
and it was, you know, yeah, it was right in front of me. So, and the throw, like I said, he underthrew Patterson, so Patterson had to come back for the ball, but Patterson's like 6'3", and he fought him for that ball and picked it off, and so. You know, even though he's there, even though it's not a great throw by Brady, he still had to work to get that interception. And then to stick with Edelman across the field, I believe it was like an in cut or a crossing route. That's not an easy thing to do. And to stick with him across the field and make the play on the Hoyer throw a little bit like two or three plays later was impressive. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, we'll see what he does, but it could be that he makes the squad. And again, and so the corner we couldn't think of is Cravon LeBlanc was his name.
Cravon LeBlanc. Oh my God, that was gonna kill me.
And so you're welcome. So I had to look it up. I didn't.
Cravon with an apostrophe, right? It's C-R-E apostrophe V-O-N.
C-R-E apostrophe V-O-N.
Cravon LeBlanc.
That's
that was gonna kill me.
So, but the thing with him is that I think they liked him and thought they could squeeze him to the practice squad. It didn't happen. He gets picked up by somebody else. And I think the Patriots at this point right now are in that position where it's like, if that guy looks good at all and they try to get him to the practice squad, we need to pick that guy up because just because they cut him doesn't mean he's not going to come back. And obviously, you know, Butler ended up on the practice squad in 2014 and ends up winning the Super Bowl for them. So it's like, just because the guy's on the practice squad with the Patriots doesn't necessarily mean they don't like him, which is true, but it's also become now, because they've hit on it a few times, now all of a sudden teams are looking at it saying, okay, if the Patriots cut a guy and he's looked decent at all, we need to go after that guy. So if Lewis continues to do what he's doing, you know, the Patriots may have to make a decision to say, you know, can we lose him if someone picks him up? Obviously, we want him on the practice squad. Or are we going to say he's too good to lose, so we got to find a spot for him, you know? And that's, I think that's going to be an interesting situation.
Right.
But we'll see.
Quavon LeBlanc started like 10 games for the Bears.
Yeah, he was like their starting, right corner or left corner, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, he's down on the depth chart now because they signed Prince Amukamara, who I think stinks, but that's neither here nor there. But yeah, so he's down on the depth chart a little bit. But he played, yeah, they cut him, and then he ended up starting for them multiple games, you know, for most of the season. So yeah, that's, you know, could happen with Lewis this year. So we'll see. So that's it. Anyone else stick out to you, or is that it?
Trent Brown is enormous. He is very big. Actually, probably the one low light that I would point out for Ryan Lewis was there was a play that I don't remember what day it was, but Trent Brown ended up blocking Ryan Lewis in space, and it was incredible. It was just incredible to watch. I'm pretty sure Trent Brown has maybe like 180 pounds on Ryan Lewis.
Probably more, but
it was just, I mean, he really hustled to get to the second level, but it was, once he got there, it was just unfair. You know, you got a little worried for Ryan in that moment, but he's been, you know, he looks like he's physically in good shape, which in the past had been the issue for him. And if he's all good in that sense and can pick up the offense and gel with the rest of the guys, I mean, they're probably in pretty good shape.
Yeah. Now, it's his last year of the contract, correct? Is he on the final year of his deal?
Yep.
Yeah. So that could be...
He's motivated.
Absolutely. And that could be a situation for the Patriots where he plays well and, you know, does a great job at left tackle. He ends up getting paid by someone, and then Wynn steps into that left tackle position. And then all they got to worry about is Shaq Mason. So we'll see what happens with him. But that's
right.
A totally different discussion for a different day. But
right. Well, and then the other thing is that sometimes, you know, a little bit akin to the what I was saying about McCarron with Houston, which is like, if you love him so much, why'd you let him go? Shanahan requires such specific things of all of the offensive line positions that I think you actually do kind of have a good explanation for. With that, along with some of the conditioning issues, he has such specific prototypes about what he wants there that, to me, you know, that's a player who was available for potentially a good reason, or at least not a bad reason. So,
right.
You know, that's just another thing that, to me, says you're potentially in a good situation there and we're able to make a deal that was potentially advantageous.
Right. That makes sense. That does make sense. So, all right. Well, before I let you go, I do have a question that I asked to all my guests, anyone that's a new listener. This is the Weekend Warrior podcast. Weekend Warrior is someone who plays, kind of continues to play sports, even though they're not in a sanctioned league, whether it be, you know, a high school team or a college team, whatever. You know, people are just, you're just kind of playing because you enjoy playing. So my question to you is, what is your favorite or most memorable Weekend Warrior moment?
Okay. So I should preface this by saying that I have horrible hand-eye coordination and I can't play any sports that require like dealing with balls.
The good news is that that's not too many. There's almost no sports that involve playing with balls at all.
Right. So the closest that I can get to being able to really answer this question is to tell you about my Saturday afternoon spin class. I go to Flywheel in Boston, which is like my favorite place in the world. And you have this thing called the torque board, which tells you how many points you've accumulated based on how hard you're biking relative to all the other people in the class. And my instructor's name is Colin. I'm really dedicated to him. I only go to his classes. And he teaches one class on Saturday afternoons at 4:30. That's 60 minutes long. Most of them are 45. But every weekend when I'm home, I go to the Saturday 4:30. And a couple weeks ago, usually I'm lucky if I get in the top 10. But a couple weeks ago, I'm pretty sure because all of the hardcore people stayed home, but it doesn't matter. A couple of weeks ago, I'm fitting, and we're going through class, and I was just feeling really good. And, you know, I was, I think for most of it, like around fifth place. And, but then we get later in the class, and I think I popped up to fourth. And eventually we were, you know, I think it was the last song or the second to last song or something, and I was second. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've never won this class. This is crazy. But we were so late in the class that I was thinking, yeah, I don't think this is going to happen. I don't think I have enough time to make this up. And then we're in the very last song and we get to literally the last second. And probably with, you know, 3 seconds or less before the class ends, I see the little thing. The little screen on my bike, the number shift from 2 to 1. And I came in first for the very first and probably last time in the Saturday Fly 60. So that is my moment.
That's awesome. It is certainly way more outside the box than anything else that anyone's ever done. Although I do not
have a single highlight from my life that involves wiffle ball or any other sport that you would play on a weekend.
And that's the thing. Like, even though it's like, it's totally different than anything else anyone's ever given me, like, it's not like what those people were doing or what I would normally be doing requires any sort of skill whatsoever. Matter of fact, you could make the argument that yours requires a heck of a lot more work than any of the other ones. But it's definitely outside the box, but I like it. That's the whole point. That's the point of the Weekend Warrior moment is to have something totally different and unique to you. And that's pretty awesome. So it's our first spin. It's our first spin class moment, but pretty cool moment. I mean, to come in first place after a full 60 minute class, you were working your butt off. That's for sure.
Thank you. Well, I'm glad we got to talk about it. I'm glad I got to give, you know, my guy Colin a shout out.
Yeah, there you go. You can tell Colin, you know, that you gave him a shout out on my show and then there'll be another listener. So
absolutely. He loves the Patriots.
Oh, see, so there you go. Perfect. So all right, Norb, listen, before you leave, why don't you tell everyone, you know, where they can interact with you, and obviously, you know, you're on the globe, but you know, kind of plug yourself a little bit.
The Boston Globe, it comes out in print, bostonglobe.com. I have a Twitter feed. It's my name. My name is really hard to spell. It's NORAPRINCIOTTI, so at Norb Princiotti. I do tweet about my dog other than the Patriots. So, you know, spoiler alert. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. There is nothing wrong with tweeting about your dog, by the way. It's pretty,
Oh yeah. Dog tweets are the best tweets.
Of course. So, all right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It was a lot of fun having you, and maybe we'll do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Love to.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Okay. I want to say a quick, big thanks again to Nora. I really appreciate her coming on the show. She's definitely a writer. She's kind of up and coming, a fairly new writer on the scene, you know, for the Patriots. She's a writer I respect a lot. I think she does a lot of really good things. I think she's super knowledgeable. And so I really appreciate her, having her come on the show. If you're not following her already on Twitter, you should be. You know, in this episode, if you're listening to this episode and you can get onto Twitter, I tag her in this episode. So if you haven't been following her already, you can. So definitely do that. I was also telling her it's funny because my oldest is named Nora. It's spelled differently. My daughter has the H and she doesn't have the H. But it's just funny, like, calling her Nora and saying things like, you know, thanks to Nora for coming on. It's weird because, you know, my oldest, who's 7, is Nora. And she's the only Nora that I've really interacted with before. So it's just kind of funny. Anyways, do want to remind you as well that the interview is brought to you by Beard Brand. Beard Brand is a premium men's grooming company with products not only for your beard, but also for your hair and body. Do yourself a favor and head over to beardbrand.com and take care of yourself. Now, we're going to get into the three-minute drill in this week in sports history. As always, we do start with a three-minute drill. So, Marcus, take us away.
And now for something a little different.
Check, check, check. Three-minute drill, three-minute drill, said.
All right, so this week was the week that was the week that my season tickets came in for the Patriots. It is my 19th year as a season ticket holder. It's the 25th year of the Crafts owning the team. It's crazy to even think that I, you know, 19 years I've had my own ticket. Next year will be 20 years I've had my own ticket. It's crazy. I wanted to give you just some quick history, really. That was an interesting story. My dad, back in 1967, won a pair of season tickets, actually. Won a pair of season tickets. They played at Fenway in 1967. He won a pair of season tickets then. So he went, and he really didn't even go to a lot of games. He was 14 at the time, and his younger brother was like, I don't even remember, like somewhere around like 10. So it was tough for them to kind of take the train in to go to the games. So they went to a few, but they didn't go to a ton. And, you know, his little brother was little enough that he was like, I don't really care about going. I got to take the train. I don't really want to do all that. So he didn't go to a ton of games, but it is interesting that he did have season tickets at Fenway. When they built Schaefer Stadium in 1971, his family picked him up. My grandfather passed away in 82, and they went for like two more years. It just wasn't the same. So they ended up getting rid of them. I was born in 84, and that was the last year they had them because they were just kind of like, it was too much stuff going on. It was nuts over there. Everyone was drunk all the time. And, you know, it wasn't the same without their dad. So they gave them up. Of course, they go to the Super Bowl in 85, but they gave them up. And the day Bill Parcells was hired in 1993, my dad and uncle went down and bought a pair of season tickets in 1993, and they've had them ever since. That was before Kraft bought the team. Remember, Parcells was hired in 93, Kraft bought the team in 94. So, and then my 16th birthday gift in the year 2000, turned 16 in the year 2000, my 16th birthday gift was a ticket. Now, back then, it was $1,000 cheaper for the year than it is now. So it was a little bit more of a reasonable gift, but still pretty cool. And so I've had it now for 19 years. And obviously, you know, if you do the math, you can figure how old I am. But it's, yeah, it was great. It was great. And so this is, you know, again, heading into my 19th season as a season ticket holder. And I've had so many memories there. And I took my kids with Mike, who used to be on the show with me, to the in-stadium practice on Monday, which is season ticket holders only. And it was just cool to have the kids at the stadium. They feel like the stadium is like their home. And I feel the same way too. And it's great to kind of keep that in the family. And so I'm really happy about that. And again, it's just a place that, you know, we can kind of bond. And I've had so many great memories with my family there. And I know my kids will have great memories there too. So it's just something for us that's kind of like in the family, like almost like we're born into it and that's the way it is. And so we're very, very lucky. And obviously, you know, right now with what's going on, it's been crazy. But this is my 3 minutes. With what's going on right now, it's been crazy about, you know, how good they've been and everything. But, you know, it's really kind of more of a family thing for us even than it is anything else. Football is like, you know, almost like a religion in my house. It's crazy. So anyways, also, I would like to say, I know Tom Brady was drafted in the year 2000. So he obviously had a positive influence on the Patriots. Bill Belichick was brought in the year 2000. Clearly, he's had a positive influence on the Patriots. But I do think it's a little bit of a strange coincidence that I got my season tickets at the year 2000, and things have seemed to turn around for the better in the year 2000. I'm not saying it's all on me. I'm not saying it's totally my responsibility. I'm just saying kind of interesting. As soon as I got my season ticket, we started doing well. Just throwing that out there. Anyways, before I get too big of a head, let's go into This Week in Sports History.
And now for something we think you'll really like. This Week in Sports History.
Okay, so I'm going to go chronologically as always. It's actually interesting because all three of the events are from the same date. Well, day, not date, obviously, but the same day. The first one is August 1st, 1906. Harry McIntyre of the Brooklyn Superbase must have been owned by Nicki Minaj. Nicki Minaj is the one that sings Super Bass. I don't know if that's right or not. I'm just an old guy. I have no clue. I think this is Super Boss. I don't know if it's Super Bass, Super Boss. I have no idea. I don't know. It's the Brooklyn Dodgers or the LA Dodgers before they were the Brooklyn Dodgers. I don't know. 1906. The Brooklyn Super Bass. Harry McIntyre. No hits. Pittsburgh. for 10 2/3 innings. 10 2/3 innings, and he gets the loss 1-0 after giving him an unearned run in the 13th inning. So tough luck for Harry McIntyre there. Obviously, Pedro went past 9 innings with a no-hitter and ended up losing that game. This guy goes 10 2/3 and loses on an unearned run in the 13th. It's just rude, if you ask me. But nevertheless, that's August 1st, 1906. August 1st, 1987, Mike Tyson beats Tony Tucker by decision to become the first boxer to ever hold all three major belts at the same time. That's the WBA, the WBC, and the IBF. Pretty impressive work by Mike Tyson. Obviously, Mike Tyson was, you know, back in the day, was one of the greatest boxers of all time. Now, considered maybe one of the greatest actors of all time. A one-man show off Broadway. I don't know. That might be a little over-exaggeration, but the point is, okay, he's an actor and he's doing pretty well. That's the point. Okay, and then the last one is August 1st, 2012. 8 women are disqualified from the 2012 Summer Olympics. They were badminton athletes. Oh, yes. There was a badminton scandal in the 2012 Olympics. Here's the interesting part of it, okay? Now, these 8 women, 2 pairs, by the way, it was pairs. So there were 2 pairs from South Korea, a pair from China, and a pair from Indonesia. They were ejected from the tournament because they were found guilty of, and you can quote me here, or I'm quoting them, I guess, not quoting, you know, air quotes here, not using best efforts and conducting oneself in a manner that is clearly abusive or detrimental to the sport. Now, here's the deal. Here's what happens. It's similar to the other, you know, World Cup or whatever, where you have group stages and then you have the tournament stage, okay? So you have group stage, and then after the group stage, you have like a championship round. So the group stage, obviously, you have to get out of there to qualify for the tournament. But once you're out of the group stage, then it becomes about seeding. So what happened is that these four groups of women were throwing the match so that they would have a worse opponent. And realistically, what they were saying, and I think it's BS, but what they were saying is that they were trying to throw the matches so they didn't play each other. Like South Korea was trying to throw the 2 matches because they didn't want to play against each other. China was trying to throw the match because they didn't want to play against the other Chinese team. That's what they said. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But what's interesting is that the decision was actually very highly debated because there were some people that arguing that, yes, the teams weren't performing the best effort during that portion of it. However, they were doing their best to win the tournament because they were conserving resources in a super competitive sport. And realistically, you know, people do that from time to time, right? You see teams throw games, essentially. And they're not throwing games, but they're tanking. You see teams do that all the time. Or they say, okay, we're going to rest all our guys, or whatever the case may be. But that wasn't the case here. I mean, one of them, they said, like, one of the matches had, like, a mat, like, the longest volley was 4 for the entire match. We're talking about Olympic athletes here. I mean, that's ridiculous. So it was over the top, I think, is the reason, is what they had a problem with. They did change the format in 2016. What they changed it to, I don't know. I'm going to be honest with you. I read it. I have no idea what the hell it said. The first seed gets to this, and the second seed has to do another seeding with the after its second. I was like, I'm totally lost. I got a popsicle headache, as Velga would say. I have no idea. But they changed the rules of badminton because of that one thing. Highly debated, but yes, all 8 of them were kicked out. They weren't doping. They were throwing matches that didn't actually count. It was weird. But anyways, that's what they were doing. So that does it for the show. Again, I want to thank Nora for coming on. Again, check her out on the Globe. You know, and if you're not following her on Twitter, you should be. She's an interesting Twitter follower, or interesting follow on Twitter, I should say. And, you know, for me personally, again, I'd like to, you know, I want people that will interact, number one. But the big thing for me is don't take yourself too seriously, right? And she doesn't. She's kind of has, you know, she incorporates her dog in there a little bit, like she said. Like, she's an interesting person to follow. So, yes, you're going to get a lot of football. Yes, she's super knowledgeable, but she's also a fun person to follow as well. So, definitely check her out. I also want to thank Marcus from the Boxers Podcast for the intro song and the 2 cuts. Him and Wesley do a show on Mondays, Movie Mondays, And then obviously Honor the Triforce as well. Big shout out to MDOT and Core for the outro song, at MDOT Boston on Instagram and Twitter, and then at KORE of EMS. So thank you very much for them. Mike, man, doing big things, doing big things. So it's coming. I know I keep saying that, but I promise you it's coming. You know, there's going to be some interesting stuff. So make sure you're following along with him so you can check some of that out. We got an interesting debate actually on Twitter, kind of in the middle of it right now, because I was saying that, you know, everyone except Brady's expendable. And he was saying, well, you know, Brady's replaceable too if you look at the last few things. He's a Bledsoe guy. Loves Bledsoe. Always loved Bledsoe. Kind of was always a Brady hater. Not because he didn't like Brady, but because he loved Bledsoe and he hated the fact that Brady took his job. And so it's kind of funny we've gone back and forth about it, you know, for years now. Probably, you know, close to 20 years at this point. But anyways, just kind of a little side note there. As for me, you can follow me on Twitter at Weekend War Pod with no E's, WKNDWARPOD. Or you can follow my, you can follow my personal account at WTP Lane. And again, I'm just on there to talk sports. So if you're interested in talking sports, you got a question, you want to shoot me a question or an email, whatever the case may be, reach out. My DMs are open, or you tweet right at me. It doesn't matter. And let's talk football. Let's talk football. Let's talk sports, whatever. It's football season, so I'm focused on football right now. But you ask me a question about the Red Sox, too? I don't care. I just want to talk sports. That's what I'm on Twitter to do. So, again, thank you for listening again. I really appreciate it. Have a great week, and I'll see you next week.
Simmons, no timeouts. You got to go. Williams, three. Yes!
You'll need to tune in. This is the show, bro. Put the game upside down like a strobe globe. Weekend Warriors, it's a podcast. What you call the commentary, should I call trash?
Warriors, come out to play.
Weekend Warriors, it's a podcast. What you call the commentary, should I call trash?
Hey, yo.
WTP. Warriors, especially on the weekend, looking for that sports talk, this is where it be, man. Breakdowns on your favorite teams and all that, hear about the starters long before the ball snap. You can call Pat or go ahead and call Mike, cause we here all night, no time to stall, right? 2 seconds left, clutch shot, it's go time. Knuckles on the O-line, watch the losers go wine.
Turn me up on that radio dial. It's been a while since I played, but I'm here with a smile. Taking jump shots, get them in and I'm out. I'm breaking records like Bill Russell, kid has got muscle. Being polite when I'm at this mic, you see the city of champs coming to victory dance, buddy. It's radio talk, so turn it up when it's on. We're gonna listen and rock to what it is that you want.
Warriors, you'll need to tune in.